Dr. Miriam Lebok, who is a professor of the practice of public health and director of the Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute at the University of North Carolina Gilling School of Global Public Health. She has nearly 35 years of research and program work on maternal child dyad health and nutrition, worked in more than 50 countries, and has published over 300 manuscripts. Her work today is going to be on the latest research on the status of baby-friendly hospital initiative worldwide.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Gee. Thank you very much. I don't have any pretty pictures. If you came here to see pictures of mothers and babies, you're going to have to wait till my last slide. What I really want to talk to you about is this one project, the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative. And I press this. I have no conflicts of interest except that I used to work for the U.S. government, which is the single largest purchaser of formula in the world. So no real conflicts of interest. The study that I'm about to discuss was really supported by our endowment, with thanks to the Nutrition Division of UNICEF headquarters for encouraging this work. We're going to discuss a little bit about the 20-year-long history of the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative, progress in terms of numbers, and a little bit about the impact of all this and where we might go from here. So the outline follows the learning objectives, and let's launch in. I wanted to start for this group. I should have actually included a slide to talk about why are we bothering with breastfeeding in this world that's, you know, burdened with HIV and floods and water problems. Why are we talking about breastfeeding? I think it's really important to start with just a tiny refresher that breastfeeding could save 1.3 million lives a year, according to the Lancet series. All of the work that we do to prevent mother-to-child transmission could prevent about 2% of the child deaths each year. Now, I'm not saying that we should stop doing everything we're doing in HIV, but if you think about that, if you're interested just in child survival, support for exclusive breastfeeding is more than six times as important for child survival than are other things that we put a great deal of resources into. We have to think about everything, and I'll talk about the money into breastfeeding, going into breastfeeding in just a bit. Why breastfeeding? Why does it save so many lives? It reduces infectious disease for sure. It also reduces diabetes, reduces obesity, and many other scourges that we're having now in our double burden of nutrition. And it also is good for moms. It reduces their breast cancer, ovarian cancer, it reduces the risk of these things. And exclusive breastfeeding reduces the risk of HIV transmission from mother to child compared to the mixed breastfeeding pattern that is common worldwide. So exclusive breastfeeding significantly reduces mother-to-child transmission. For all of these reasons, it's important. And it was considered important 20 years ago when the 10 steps for successful breastfeeding in maternity care centers was developed into an initiative by UNICEF and WHO. Excuse me, I had a little prejudice. UNICEF and WHO, was that better? And this initiative really was designed to create a designation process. We knew about the 10 steps, they've been around since the late 80s, but to encourage people to actually implement them in their hospital, Jim Grant, who was a phenomenal creative person, decided to start this initiative. And it was launched 20 years ago. My goodness, feels like just yesterday. Now, when Jim Grant was alive at UNICEF, he was the director of UNICEF, he saw to it that this issue received attention. And there were billions of dollars put into breastfeeding in the late 1990s. By 2000, the interest on the part of UNICEF and WHO leadership had decreased to a small part of the nutrition interest. So rather than breastfeeding being a goal in and of itself, it became a subsection of everything that was going on in nutrition. And the decision by WHO and UNICEF was, well, countries are now on their own. We've done it for 10 years. Go forth and multiply. And they stopped the global oversight, but not the global interest. The global interest is maintained till today. So national support also continues. WHO and UNICEF have been updating materials, but are not, at least centrally, actively involved in supporting this initiative. They are, it's one on their list, as opposed to one of the top four, which it was under Mr. Grant. WHO and UNICEF have updated the materials, and they are now out there for, they've been out for 2 years on the WHO website. So what's happened over these two decades? Well, resources have become quite limited. As I said, central resources have pretty much stopped. There's new priorities in global breastfeeding support. Over about the last 5 years, the priority has shifted from facilities to community. And the concept for breastfeeding support has shifted from breastfeeding, because breastfeeding makes a difference, to breastfeeding as nutrition, breastfeeding within primary health care, and so on. And you, if you look at the projects over the years, you can see this very real shift. The word breastfeeding falls out of the title. It's still in there, but it is lower down on it. So the purpose that I was undertaking this study is to really just assess what's going on right now in baby-friendly hospital worldwide, and to explore if these new materials are useful and are they being implemented. So at the request of the World Alliance for Breastfeeding Action and in collaboration with UNICEF, I set about contacting everybody I knew. I went to the official contacts that we had used on this issue from 2006. I should say we've updated the data on global breastfeeding about every 3 to 5 years since its inception. So I went back to all the old official contacts, and of course a lot of them were no longer there. So then I began asking friends and family, do you know anybody who's in charge of BFHI? So I used whatever networking resources I could to try to find out what's going on today. So the data that I'm about to share with you show the number of hospitals ever certified. Does that mean that they're active today? Not necessarily. In fact, estimates have been as little as 20% of those that were ever certified still follow the guidance. And you might say, why the huge backsliding? Because as a public health intervention, we in breastfeeding are one of the very few interventions that does not have a corporate sponsor. In fact, we have a corporate detractor. And as soon as the energy behind Baby Friendly leaves the hospital, the commercial side comes in and frankly actively undoes the effort. So all I can show you is those that have been ever certified, and we'll discuss a little bit the meaning of how much meaning this has today. I asked also about the presence of a government breastfeeding oversight committee, and that's because the Innocenti Conference of 1990 called for four things in every country. It called for a government oversight committee with a budget, multidisciplinary committee. Secondly, it called for the 10 steps being in place, which was implemented as baby-friendly. The third thing it calls for is the code of marketing of breast milk substitutes. Everybody familiar with the code of marketing of breastfeeding substitutes? Okay, breast milk substitutes. It basically simply asks industry not to do false and misleading advertising and not to buy people off. And the fourth thing is maternity protection, which is paid maternity leave, paid work breaks for breastfeeding, things that we need in the United States as well. So what are the findings? Unfortunately, only 33% response rate. However, for this kind of global survey, it's not so bad. 33 countries officially replied. We now have in the world more than 21,000 hospitals that have ever been designated. And that's a hefty percent. It represents close to 28% of all maternities worldwide have at some time really considered and implemented these steps. Now, for those of us who live in industrialized countries, it's kind of sad that we've only done about 8%, and in the less developed settings, it's closer to 1 in 3. And anything that, once you hit 1 in 3, you know, that S-shaped curve, you're really on a roll. So that means it's having an influence in those settings. And this is the total designation. As I said, I was going to put in a little B here because there were billions of dollars being spent here, M here because there were millions of dollars being spent here, and by the international groups now, I'd say it's in the thousands, but maybe with USAID, with USAID, maybe it's slightly higher. But the effort on facilities, I would say, probably is quite low today. So think of this as BMT here. Notice there's a little bit of a sag in here, and we'll explain that in just a minute. What I've separated out here are the regions of the world: West and Central Africa, East and Southern Africa, Middle East, the newly independent states, South Asia, Eastern Asia, the TACRO, it's basically Central and South America and industrialized settings. And when you look at this, one thing is very clear. EPRO dominated in terms of number of hospitals. And our colleagues from China, this is very nice as it's following the China presentation, because this is China that declared all of its hospitals and designated all of its hospital. So is this really there? And because of that, I just wanted to look at three patterns among the other regions. So I expanded them. This is the same slide, just expanded. And here you can see a little bit better the three patterns of implementation. And what we see is the West and Central Africa, East Africa, and the Middle East kind of jump-started. They had a lot going on in the 90s, and then are sort of settling out. South Asia, EPRO, and TACRO, South Asia, EPRO, and TACRO jump-started. They just dove in, got a lot done early on. Then Africa and the Middle East were a little bit slower to start, some progress well into this decade, and now they're kind of settling out. What's of interest is that the newly independent states and industrialized countries, in a way, are just getting started in the last 7 to 10 years. Now, why might this be? Partly due to finances available. When the newly independent states got out there, they realized they were suddenly getting a commercial crunch, and they really decided actively, we have to do something about it. And also because of Michael Kramer's Probit study that some of you might know, that showed in White Russia and Belarus that these practices were hugely effective. So what does this tell us? All of these countries now, except for industrialized, all of these percentages right here are about 25% of the region, más o menos. So things are flattening out at about 25%. Is this due to lack of resources? Is this due to the fact that that's the low-hanging fruit? I think what's important to think about, this just shows the percentage. The black line is the percent of hospitals ever designated. Blue is developing country percentage, and here are us pathetic folk. What's been happening here? And I think it's simply that the things have come together in industrialized countries about breastfeeding finally. There finally is recognition of the data and the research that came out in the 1990s that it's meaningful, and I think people are beginning to do what's needed to support breastfeeding. So do they still matter? Well, from the start, the developing countries said, this must be a program for the less developed countries. And the less developed countries said, we don't have many hospitals, so this must be for the developed countries. So there was a kind of this weird thing at first. But recent data show that any additional breastfeeding program you do works better if there's a solid BFHI in place. The work in Madagascar and Ghana did beautifully in the community because the whole physician health worker network was already on board. So when you go out into the community with a breastfeeding message, if they go into a health center and come back with formula, it blows the whole community effort. On the other hand, if there's already a well-established health care provider support for breastfeeding and you go into the community, it works much more rapidly. And I'm hoping that report will be out soon. We also have the issue of message burnout, 20 years of talking about BFHI, for goodness sakes. So we've tried to take the effort beyond the maternity setting. There's been recent revisions in the BFHI materials. It's been expanded to include other healthcare services and to include the community. There are now 10 steps in these materials for the community, 10 steps for the doctor's office, and so on. BFHI has also expanded to include maternity questions, similar to those in the International Mother-Baby list of 10 things. So it's expanding, if you will, out into the community, but it's also expanding into the mother and out into childhood. There's 5 sections in the new materials. I'm not going to dwell on this. We took a whole bunch of scattered materials and developed it into background and implementation, then the materials for training decision makers, a 20-hour clinical course, self-appraisal and monitoring tools, and then the assessment tool that is only available to national committees. Of those who reported, only 40% of the countries reported that they have an active government committee. We're just on the verge of getting one here in the United States. It's to have the government say it's worthwhile to look at this issue is very important politically. Less than half have started to use the new materials, but those who are using the materials, it's interesting to me anyway, that actually more have picked up the maternity care module than the HIV module. I'm not quite sure what that means. There is indeed a growing interest in the mother-baby again. I have a question mark there, but there's been a lot more discussion. The previously requested HIV module is being implemented less frequently than maternity. So there is this interest right now in mother-baby. The continued interest in this is testimony to the acceptance of the effectiveness of the 10 steps. As I mentioned, it's now very clear that where they're in place, there is more exclusive breastfeeding, and where they are in place, community efforts have a greater impact on breastfeeding. So having that buy-in by the healthcare world is tremendously important for any other project you want to do in this field. And finally, I just wanted to say it's also important now, as I mentioned earlier, and looking at the data that Eckerd presented, that if we could support exclusive breastfeeding in the countries with HIV, we would have a huge impact on preventing mother-to-child transmission. And when we calculated this out, actually, if we could actually support women to exclusively breastfeed in those settings, it would have more impact on child survival, HIV child survival, than all the current work combined. So I am just going to conclude by showing you the pretty pictures of mothers and babies that I promised you, and thanking you for your ongoing interest in this vital child survival intervention. Thank you.